Let's bring in Mark Edelman. He's a tenured law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, Baruch College, City University of New York. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. I'm not surprised that this ruling came down, to be honest. I think you sort of, just from, you know, hearing some of the people I know at the commissioner's office in baseball, for example, they seem to think this was probably going to happen. I think Adam Silver, the NBA, has essentially spent much of his time sort of telling people this is a fait accompli. The question is, how do we cash in on it? But now that this is done, what is the next step for legalized gambling, for example, in the state of New York? What would the next step be?
Well, in the state of New York, sports gambling is currently illegal. As many people forget, the Professional and Amateur Sport Protection Act only went into place in 1992. So essentially, New York is rolled back to where they were in 1991, where sports gambling was illegal in the state, but only because it was illegal under the New York state laws. Now, what the New York State Congress could do, which they were not allowed to do before, would be to propose a bill in the state to legalize in any manner they want sports betting. So what I think we'll see New York and other states doing next will be very similar to what we saw happen with fantasy sports about 2 or 3 years ago, where the state legislators have put forward a bill that has largely advocated for on behalf of lobbyists. They vote in favor of the bill. And that becomes the new state rules with respect to sports gambling.
Do you think that we are going to see sports gambling in the U.S. go the way of, you know, I use the example of the U.K., which is the one I'm sort of most familiar with, where, you know, you have the ability to bet in the stadiums. You know, you have sponsorship of teams, corporate sponsorship of teams, naming rights of stadiums, all of that open to any company that wants to ante up. Do you think that's sort of where this is going to go, that once it is legalized in some of these states, that, you know, the reach will be pretty deep?
I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. And the best analog I can give is the ticket resale markets. If we turn back the clock about 25 years ago, and I were to tell you that every professional sports team would have a partnership with a ticket resale company, and they would be advertising the stadiums for companies like StubHub and Tickets.com, most people would turn to me and say that would never happen because the ticket resale market we call scalping in the United States, and it violates law. But as soon as the law changed, the teams and leagues found an opportunity for an additional revenue stream. And I think we're going to see something very similar when it comes to sports gambling.
What are the dangers for sports leagues here? I'll ask you this. Are there dangers anymore? Because, you know, it's funny. I mean, I've done a lot of reading on, and soccer has unfortunately had, it has had its issues with gambling, but at lower levels. I mean, there's an awful lot of talk about, you know, Chinese gambling syndicates and controlling or, you know, running gambling operations involving lower leagues in a lot of European countries. I mean, you can bet on any league just about anywhere. And frankly, a lot of those leagues, the players don't get paid all that much. So, you know, if you're making $10,000 a month and somebody comes along and offers you $5,000 to throw a game, you might think about it. Now, at the upper levels, and I'm thinking of, you know, U.S. professional sports, if I'm making $32 million a year, it's going to probably take a hell of a lot to get me to throw a game.
I think that's correct. I mean, short of threats to the lives of individuals and their families, I don't think it will happen. Now, the league that has the real risk is the NCAA. Mm-hmm. The NCAA right now is in the same shoes as the professional sports leagues before the players unionized. In essence, you've got these fat cats like Mark Emmert who make several million dollars per year, yet they have rules in place that prevent college athletes from even selling their names and likenesses for endorsement deals. And over 80% of the college athletes in high-level football and BCS Division I basketball live below the poverty line. So the NCAA is going to bear a really big risk here, and it's entirely due to their own creation.
I hadn't actually thought of that, but now that you mention it, I mean, could this be in some ways, could this push the NCAA towards, you know, at least further investigation of the idea of at least a living wage for athletes or paying paying college athletes?
I think it's going to be one of many factors. You know, the NCAA, and very appropriately, is getting hit on all angles right now. There's the Jenkins lawsuit in which they might very well lose, which could lead to the end of their restraints on athlete pay. There is that ridiculous report they recently issued on reforming college sports, which in essence they said that college athletes should control their own likeness, but we can't figure out how, so we're going to throw up our hands and not allow them to do it, which was very disingenuous. We now have the arrival of sports gambling. And very subtly, the NCAA made an announcement yesterday morning. They didn't say a word about sports gambling, but knowing that this case was coming down the pipeline, even though they were purported to be so opposed to it, they now have a new partnership with a company that's based out of Australia to collect and use their data for all sorts of purposes. So they're already planning to profit from gambling. So it's just one more step that might force the NCAA to frankly act like human beings when it comes to their elite college athletes.
So how does a sport, for example, like Major League Baseball, how does it react to this? How does it go about getting a piece of the pie? Because I've got to think that, you know, in a lot of ways, and I would imagine the states want the majority of the revenue out of this. But how do the leagues go about getting their share of this?
Well, the leagues, it looks like, already are capitalizing in two different ways and will be looking to capitalize in the third. The first and simplest way that this benefits the league is to the extent that we have legalized sports gambling, it might draw more fans interested into the sport. Now, I don't know what that will mean in terms of live attendance, but I think it will definitely increase viewership of broadcasts of sporting events, which in turn will allow them to sell their broadcast fees to major stations for greater sums of money. So that's the first way. The second way, at least with respect to Major League Baseball, is for several years now, they have held an equity interest in the daily fantasy sports company DraftKings. I think we would all be fooling ourselves if we didn't acknowledge that these companies that would DFS, that for years were saying, we're not gambling, we're not gambling, we're not gambling, well, they really always kind of were gambling. And it's going to be so easy for them to move one step over. So the second way in which the leagues will benefit, and it's baseball and hockey through DraftKings, basketball through FanDuel, is they will be shareholders in companies that are going to be moving closer to sports gambling, perhaps going right in. Now, to the sports league owners, this is not enough to double up on the profit. So they're now asking the states to award them what they're calling integrity fees. Mm-hmm. They're claiming to have some intellectual property right in the statistics themselves and are trying to convince the states that they should get a share of the money that comes from sports gambling as a result. Now, Jeff, between you and me and everyone that's listening, to be honest, the intellectual property argument is completely bogus. In fact, there was a Second Circuit case as well as an Eighth Circuit case that made pretty clear that statistical information that's independently gathered is in the public domain and there is no IP right. But at the end of the day, it makes no difference whether there really is an IP right or not. If the lobbyists could convince the states to give a share of the revenue back to the leagues, it doesn't matter if they say it's based on intellectual property right or based on integrity or based on just we want it. If they do it, they will get it.
Now, here's another area where it gets interesting to me. And I would think, Mark, I don't know about you, but I would think most states would probably legalize gambling. Can you think of states where that would be particularly opposed to this off the top of your head?
I mean, I could think of a few. I mean, Alabama is one. Alabama does not even have a state lottery.
Okay.
They have a very big religious population down there that opposes on moral grounds. But I think you're right. The overwhelming majority of the states will move in that direction.
Okay, let's take that as a given then. If I am a team and I'm located in a state that doesn't allow legalized gambling, or let's say I'm the Toronto Blue Jays, and I don't know if there's going to be legalized sports gambling up here anytime soon. I know there's lotteries, but I don't know about legalized gambling. And how should I expect to share in the riches that result from people betting on sports, for example, in California or New York? Like, could you see this money going into some sort of central fund and then being dispersed, or do you think it'll be dispersed equally between teams? I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but that's an argument that I find fascinating, is that could you disperse the money equitably even if there were teams in states where there wasn't legalized gambling. You know, if I'm in a team in a state that where there's legalized gambling, I'm saying, why am I sharing with you? You're not allowing. Your state isn't allowing gambling, and you're not paying into this. Why am I giving you this money?
Well, Jeff, that's a fascinating question. And I think while talking about how to share the revenues from gambling is something that's entirely new, talking about how to share revenues in Major League Baseball and the other sports is something that's long-standing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the rules that likely will go into place will mimic what we already see. So,
okay.
For example, let's say, and New York might be, Pennsylvania we know is moving really quickly on this, so let's use them as an example. Let's say the Philadelphia Phillies sign a partnership with a sports betting company. And they place ads in their stadium, and somehow they get permission to put kiosks in their stadium. My view on that is that would be treated as local revenue. That would not be shared equally. That would be revenue that would lie with the Philadelphia Ball Club, and Toronto wouldn't get it. On the other hand, though, we already talked about Major League Baseball's partnership with DraftKings, where they own a share of that company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would go directly to MLBAM or Major League Baseball directly. That is revenue that would get split up amongst the 32 teams, just like any or 30 teams, just like any other league revenue. So that's the type of revenue that would be shared equally.
Okay.
With respect to the request for an integrity fee, and again, I don't believe the integrity fee is appropriate, but if a given state were to award the integrity fee, we're talking about that as well as on the league level as opposed on the team level. So the integrity fee as well, unless it was a separate agreement reached by the Major League Baseball clubs, would go to everybody, including the Blue Jays, even if there is no gambling in Toronto.
And we haven't even mentioned the players yet. I've got to believe that the Players Association will want a share of this somehow. How and again, I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but these are issues that are going to have to be dealt with eventually. For example, how does the Major League Baseball Players Association get its share of this? It has to be collectively bargained, I would presume.
Well, I think there are two approaches. One is exactly, as you said, collectively bargaining. And that could be done as a separate revenue stream or just a share of the overall revenues in the collective bargaining agreement. I'd have to look at the CBA as well pretty closely, but I don't think there's any carve-outs in it. So I think to the extent there are additional revenues that go into Major League Baseball, in certain areas where they end up using names and likenesses, they might be sharing. But just like any type of agreement that we have out there, a CBA is subject to renegotiation at the end of each period. And I think one of the things the Players Associations fear is that they won't be able to negotiate in the CBA for any of that revenue. So recently what we've seen happening is the same way the leagues are going to the states and trying to get an integrity fee, the players' associations are now trying to lobby for a fee themselves. And again, it's under the same somewhat dubious theories where they may or may not have any actual intellectual property rights. But I think the players' associations are very well advised in the sense that if they're able to get something in statute to have the states pay the money to them directly, well, then that's not something they would have to negotiate with the leagues for the next CBA, and that would be advantageous to them.
Fascinating discussion, Mark. Really appreciate you joining us.
It's always my pleasure, Jeff.